your ribbons and bow. Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost.
Welcome to the Lifeboat Hour, TGIF, April 3rd, 2015. I'm your host, Carolyn Baker, and we're coming to you live on Progressive Radio Network, which means that a little later in the show, we're going to be taking your calls, and I hope you'll call us because we have a fabulous guest today. And remember that our number always has been and always will be 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. Before I introduce our guest, I want to let you know that 1 week from today on the Lifeboat Hour, we will be having a special memorial show marking 1 year since the death of Mike Rupert, who died on April 13th, 2014. My guest next week will be Jenna Orkin, who, like me, spent many years working with Mike. And as many of you know, after Mike passed, Jenna wrote a book about his life and her connection with him called Scout, a Memoir of Investigative Journalist Mike Rupert. Jenna is also the author of A Moron's Guide to Collapse, and she'll be talking about both books next Friday, April 10, right here on the Lifeboat Hour. So we're now about 2 weeks into the spring season, I guess, and in places where climate chaos hasn't completely obliterated signs of seasons changing, we're starting to see some signs of spring in the northern hemisphere, like a few warmer days, maybe some blades of grass here and there, maybe some flowers popping up, maybe some birds singing, and definitely more daylight. Our guest today is a passionate lover and defender of the Earth, and she has in her life and work combined science with deep Earth spirituality and environmental activism. She lives in my state, Colorado, and loves to ride her horses across the beautiful rangelands of the southern part of our state. The woman I'm talking about is Stacy Couch. Stacy is a wildlife biologist and a certified shamanic practitioner, and also works as a publicist and journalist for Mother Nature magazine. A pioneer at heart, she empowers people with the ability to explore life's big questions. She aims to show how to form a real connection with our souls and how to do that through the natural world. A lifelong student of nature and mysticism, she has a biology degree in ecology and conservation, as well as a 2-year shamanic practitioner certificate. She's the author of an amazing book, Gracious Wild, A Shamanic Journey with Hawks. Her home is on a 38-acre ranch in southwestern Colorado, and at her website, wildgratitude.com, she offers healing and teaching services. Welcome to the Lifeboat Hour, Stacy. I'm so glad you could be with us today, and I'm glad to know that a fellow Coloradan is on the show with us and that you're doing the work you're doing in the world.
Yeah, it's fun to connect no matter where we are, right, Carolyn?
Yeah, it absolutely is. You know, I think the first thing that our listeners would want to know is, what is shamanic healing and how can it help the earth? I'm not sure that I even know what the answer to that question is, and I suppose we should start with the word shaman, which many people don't even know the meaning of. So let's begin there and let's talk about shamanic healing.
Okay, great, thanks. The shaman is both a caretaker for their community and the bonds between the relationships and connections between all things, both all things living and all things, even the elements, such as that. And they're also a spiritual director. So the term shaman actually originated in Mongolia, but has been applied globally to a person who's tending, taking care of these invisible connections between all things. And the shaman also is known for channeling grace or power or light or healing energy, depending on which way you want to see it, to tend these relationships. So they can be relationships between people, so even a couple, or a mother and child. They can be relationships between us and our soul, so it can be a very deep inner relationship. It can be a relationship of people within the community to the surrounding landscape, and also the animals to each other. It carries a very, very wide berth, and a lot of shamans kind of specialize into different areas. But they, in the past, so shamanism itself goes back actually tens of thousands of years. There's been a couple anthropologists have gone and done research, and they've discovered shamanism or traces of it on every continent, and at the root of every culture. So it's very pervasive, and it's back. It's our original spirituality, as it is. It's not a religion. It's a spiritual practice, and it's a worldview. It's in shamanism, we believe that all life is animate, and all life is interconnected. Those are two of the kind of foundational beliefs of shamanism. And so then we move right to shamanic healing and looking at what that is and how it can help the earth. Shamanic healing is really, a lot of shamanic healing works with visioning or the shamanic journey. And that helps the shamanic practitioner see these unseen connections, helps the shamanic practitioner see the movement of energy or grace throughout the world, and help direct that for the clients or whoever they're working on behalf of. So shamanic practitioners very much tend the land they work on, and as I do myself, and the connection between our clients and the animals in the land that they are at.
So the word that keeps coming up in this that I love is connection. You know, the shaman, he or she is connecting with the land, connecting with the people, connecting with the other world, just really is a connector for lots of things.
Yeah, and really we're already connected, but this is just making those sometimes invisible and unseen connections visible and giving words to it or giving stories to it that right. helps us work with them more consciously.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll be talking about that that whole thing of we're already connected in just a little bit. But I want to ask you, how did you get involved in this work? Because you had in-depth training in science and environmental education. Wasn't that enough?
Yeah, there's plenty to study, right, in the scientific world. Yeah, I have a degree in conservation biology and was just fascinated. I'm always still fascinated to this day and always studying all of the variation in the natural world is just outstanding. And then environmental education, there's always more to learn and more to teach in that realm. But really, I had this deep need to help the earth. And so I tried everything I could find. I did all sorts of different kinds of research because I was really invested in the belief that if we increased awareness and found hard facts to show policymakers what was happening either to populations of salmon or endangered seabirds or endangered songbirds, I worked on many different projects, that the policymakers would make change. And I just wasn't seeing a change. I was writing endless reports and tallying data, and it wasn't actually having an effect on the way that humans and civilization were interacting with the environments that I was studying. So then I really went into, okay, well, I'm going to go and work hands-on with a captive breeding program for an endangered species, and I'm going to help take these 12 animals that are the only ones left of their kind and bring them back into the wild. And that, too, was, I found a lot of despair in that. It was basically just caring for these. They were foxes that were sitting in pens. Mm. And I wasn't seeing change. I was only there for 10 months, and it took a number of years. Those kind of projects take a number of years. But the despair of seeing those animals in those cages and not being able to do more and wanting to do more, just I couldn't stay and endure that. So then, yeah, I went into hands-on rescue work. I did a lot of wildlife rescue work and horse rescue work as well. Mm-hmm. And went into education. And that was really great because I would be with a group of kids or groups of adults and have these either wild animals, the hawks or owls with me that I was working with, or I would have horses along. And to see people's faces light up was fantastic. They would get so excited. But I just knew that that excitement wasn't lasting, that they maybe would carry it home for a couple of days, but it wasn't causing them to create change. And so really I was looking for something that created a stirring in people's souls to actually start to care in a deep, deep, deep way for the natural world so that they would be compelled to make change and do things differently.
Well, thanks for all that, giving us their background and telling us very clearly why it wasn't enough for you.
Yeah.
And I know that you're also an activist, and I'd like you to tell us a bit about the activism that you've been involved with. And you use the term sacred activism, which is a term most of our listeners are probably familiar with, because I use it a great deal in my work, and also I've had the grandfather of sacred activism, Andrew Harvey, on my show a couple of times in the last year. But what does sacred activism mean to you?
That's definitely a question worth considering, because I think that we all interpret it differently depending on our backgrounds. And
right.
And I would say that I probably came into the activism piece of it first. Andrew talks about some people are mystics, and then they learn how to do the activism, the ground, mm-hmm. on the ground, boots on the ground kind of work. And other people are activists, and they learn how to take in the wisdom of mystical teachings. And I would say I definitely started on the activism side. I really wanted to make change for the animals and nature. But the problem I found in the world of activism, of animal rescue, is that there's a lot of anger and blind passion and contempt in the people that are doing the rescuing. So they're doing this really open-hearted, loving thing, and then they're also really angry about what's going on. And that wasn't congruent for me. I wanted to just be able to do it purely out of love. And that's where the shamanism piece came in for me, because I was also having a lot of experiences that were otherworldly. And at the same time, I just wanted to know, how can I cultivate this love? How can I cultivate this love for the natural world and come out of the despair and make use of the love? And so that's really what I think sacred activism really is about, having people, encouraging people to open up their hearts and open up their minds and eyes and souls to the natural world and to the unseen that's going on around us, that interconnectivity of all things.
Yeah, so the next question is, Stacy, how do you put sacred activism and shamanism together, and what do shamanism and sacred activism have to offer that the other roots of advocacy don't?
Well, I think this is a really fun question, because Andrew Harvey is actually studying shamanism right now,
right.
too. So that is pretty awesome to see that someone else has discovered a similar path. And because at times, yeah, it's like, why am I doing shamanism? But really, for me, it's been shamanism has been a great validation of the sacredness of all things, because it's so earth-based in its earth-centric in its practice. It's a hands-on practice of seeing God in the details. So there's a sacred piece of it.
Yeah, and you know, some people have a really hard time with that word God, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I just like to think of it in terms of love, beauty, compassion, justice, wisdom, words like that. What do you think?
Yeah, I really do try to mix the different phrases for the one thing we're all speaking of,
right?
Because shamanism is a container for any religious practice or spiritual belief. So I have people who are Christian. I have that I work with. I have people that are also atheist or pagan, and so we use a lot of different terms interchangeably. Yeah,
right. Good. Well, you know, one of the greatest illusions in the Western non-Indigenous world, and this is such a big one, one of the illusions that we have is that we're separate from nature. And you say that nature speaks to us directly through our senses, and it speaks to us intuitively and through metaphor. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, I think some of the first ways that people start, when they start waking up and looking around out in the natural world, asking for support or looking for connection or something more is they first start to perceive it through the senses. So the fresh air going out into an open space or into the woods or a park to go on a walk, the smell of the crumpling leaves in the fall or fresh grass in the spring, those are the initial ways that nature speaks to us, the bird song, and also the even just the weather, watching the weather and feeling the rain and seeing the clouds come through. There's all of these ways we see, hear, touch, taste, feel the natural world, and that's one way the natural world is message, languaging or speaking to us. And another way would be a knowing. There's an intuitive way, right, that the natural world speaks with us. There is a knowing that comes to us when we see a certain cloud formation. I remember laying in bed one morning looking out my window, and I'm lucky I have a view of some open sky, and I saw Buddha's face in the clouds one day, and it was this deep inner knowing of that's what I was seeing in that moment, and that's how nature was speaking to me in that moment. So it was very comforting. And then metaphor is a very rich, rich, rich topic that I love exploring. But we can look at animals very simply. Who they are and what they do are metaphors that are messages for us. So if we see a raccoon, raccoons are very hands-on. They have little hands. They can open jar lids and open doors. They have very dexterous little hands. And so that teaches us about being hands-on. And being clever and being able to get into things. And whereas if we were to see a deer, the message would be much different, would be about gentleness and quietness. And then wolf is totally another message. If we were either to dream about a wolf or have the great fortune of seeing one, that is a lot of energy and a lot of metaphor about being a witness, standing off in the periphery and watching from in the background in the woods, looking out on what's going on.
And almost all the indigenous tribes in the world and throughout history have used metaphor like this with animals, you know, that each animal has a symbol, and they believe that it's teaching them a particular message based on that symbol, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's animal symbology is very similar to archetype work as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, these fundamental collective ideas of what they mean, and you can go so deep into that. It's just really powerful work.
Well, in a moment, we're going to pause for a song. And this one has been going through my mind for 2 weeks, and I wasn't sure why until I received an email reply from Stacy accepting my invitation to be on the show. So this song needs no introduction, but I'll give one anyway. Mother Nature's Son by the Beatles, sung by Paul McCartney.
Thank you. swaying daisies sing a lazy song beneath the sun.
That was Mother Nature's Son from the Beatles' White Album, sung by Paul McCartney, and this is the Lifeboat Hour. I'm your host, Carolyn Baker. In a while, we're going to be taking your calls, and the number to call is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. And right now, let's get back to our guest, Stacy Couch, Colorado's own Stacy Couch, and our conversation about shamanic healing and how it can help heal the earth. Stacy, tell people how they can get in touch with you, and tell us the name of your website again.
The name of my website is wildgratitude.com, and there's definitely a contact page on there they can fill out to get in touch with me, or they can email me at info@wildgratitude.com.
Thanks. You know, so much of shamanic healing, as we were talking about before the song, involves animals, which some people say is an escapist and irrational way to go. But you say that, and I'm quoting you, relating with animals as our gurus and nature as our teacher is a moving into reality rather than escaping from it, unquote. Tell us more about that.
Well, I think you'll agree, Carolyn, that where we live now, the world we live in now, is not the norm for the human race. We've only done this, especially really what we're doing now with all of the technology we have around us, for the last 50 or 60 years at the most, and then we have a couple hundred years that we've been in this intensive civilization. Right now, we are actually living in a virtual reality created by humans and for humans, and nature is just that, the natural world. It's the original world. It's what we're actually accustomed to. I don't really know if evolutionarily in our bodies we've sped up enough yet to meet the pace of what's going on in the virtual world. And coming into nature is moving into reality, because it's moving into a world where we don't have control, which is really the truth. We really don't have control over what happens in our lives. And nature operates without us, and it has its own intelligence that's outside of a need for our strategizing or our manipulation. And I think, yeah, that this surrendering to that truth of that we don't have any control is, and learning about the divine order and divine chaos of the natural world are both things that bring us deeper into ourselves, into our own being, and closer to the truth, with a capital T, I would say.
Well, you know, I think one of the principal lessons that we have to learn right now as we go through this collapse of industrial civilization and this catastrophic climate change events that are happening around us, I think it's really important for us to learn that we're not in control. And certainly, I mean, we can take responsibility and we have certain things that we are in control of, but much less than we realize. And nature really teaches us that. I think that's one of the huge values of being connected with nature and connected with the animal world. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, most definitely. We can get so wrapped up in whatever's going on in our world, or be glued to our, our smartphone screen or computer screen. And then we go outside and realize that the grass is still coming up out of the ground without our permission or without us giving it a single thought.
Right.
And that is a very humbling place to be in. helps cultivate an appreciation for this magical process that's going in cycle, that's going on around us all the time.
Absolutely. And one of the questions I really want to ask you is why many of us relate better to animals than to people. What do you think?
Yeah. I would say that most animals are, and I'll give you the why I'm giving the caveat on most, but I feel like most animals are really direct and authentic. There's not a lot of, there's not defense mechanisms, especially with wild animals, and they aren't usually prone to trying to manipulate us. Now, the animals that live with us to varying degrees kind of pick up some of our habits, especially, I think, animals that have been abused. I've encountered some horses, especially, that have developed their own defense mechanisms or ways of manipulating people to stay safe. But that's because they've been in our world, I think, for too long. And they're really, they're an animal's inherent nature and our inherent nature, we've just come a lot farther away from it, is to be unguarded. And we're the opposite. We guard our hearts, and we oftentimes are suspicious of people when we first meet them, or we're not suspicious enough. There's just, we have these kind of overactive ways of dealing with the world that aren't just in the flow and from intuition. They're born of the mind and over-strategizing.
Absolutely. Man, they can just teach us so much. Animals can just teach us so much if we'll stay close to them and listen.
Yeah.
Just a reminder to listeners that later in the show, we're going to be taking callers. And if you have any questions or comments for Stacy, we'd love it if you'd call us with them. Again, the number is 888-874-4888. Stacy, what are some of the different types of messages that animals do bring us?
Yeah, this is interesting to think about, because when I start talking with people about communicating with animals or receiving messages from nature or wild animals, I wonder if what's going on in their head is they're thinking about telepathy, like Dr. Doolittle.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really, I can say that that does happen for me on occasion, but it's actually a pretty rare occurrence for me that I hear words or I hear some sort of message from the animal spontaneously. Typically, my interactions and what I see for other people is there's all of these different ways that we can receive guidance or information from animals. And one of the most simple ways is as regarding our path. Oftentimes, I hear people telling me stories about they had just made a certain decision about where they're going in their life. Maybe they accepted a new job, and walking out of their going in and accepting the job, they maybe go out to the parking lot to go to their car, and a hawk flies over. And in that moment, they receive an affirmation: yes, I'm on the right path. I'm doing the right thing. And so that's the message there. And I hear a lot of people get those kind of affirmation types of messages. Other times an animal will kind of come in the way, like maybe somebody will find an animal that's been injured, like a hawk or a squirrel in their neighborhood that's been injured, and they take it into a wildlife rescue. And that whole process of rescuing that injured animal kind of redirects the course of their life. Like they realize, wow, I was really like that squirrel that had been hit by that car, and I really am wounded and confused. I really need to really make a change in my life. So that's another kind of message. And one of my favorites that I hear all the time is visitations from a loved one. Often people who have passed away have favorite animals. My uncle, his favorite animal was, he loved red-tailed hawks and bald eagles. And so I often think of him and know he's nearby. And I've heard so many similar stories of people seeing animals that remind them of a loved one that's passed and that seems to come at a critical moment for them. And we talked about metaphor earlier, so that's definitely another way. And I also think, yeah, they can also direct us or point us to our inner truth. So we might be grappling with a decision and see an animal and realize through seeing that animal and watching how they are in the world, we realize what our truth is and we already had the answer with us, but it helps give us the conviction to move forward.
Now, this just kind of came to me as you were speaking. I'm sure that you have many people
who occasionally say to you, oh, come on, Stacy, like, how do you know this? I mean, like, that's just not rational that a hawk flying over is giving me a message. And I'm totally on board with you, but what do you say to those folks?
Yeah, there is an activism in the work I'm doing in that way, and that it does take some courage, because these are really simple things that we have going on around us all the time. And so for it to stand up and say, the animals are speaking to us, which I know, I have a deep conviction that they are, after years and years of work with this, there is some courage that takes, because there is that kind of skepticism out there. And for me, what ended up happening and what I continue to happen with everyone I meet and talk to about this is that there's just, it's piling up. There's too much synchronicity for it to be a coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
And synchronicity means that these events are connected in meaning, but not cause and effect.
Right.
And coincidence, we wouldn't be able to find a thread of meaning, but with synchronicity, we do, and we can, and that's why we come to a place where we can't dismiss it anymore, and then that brings us deeper into the work, which I think is fantastic.
We're probably one of the few cultures on Earth that dismisses these kinds of things and that doesn't see the synchronicity, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would, and I think that's a deep, deep loss. I think it is. We also have a loss of mythology. I mean, Joseph Campbell talked about that and was so distraught over how we were losing myth in our culture. And that's what I love about shamanism, is it brings mythology back into the fold, which is fantastic.
Well, Stacy, you've written a beautiful book that I want our listeners to know about. It's called Gracious Wild, A Shamanic Journey with Hawks. So before we use human words to talk about the book, let's listen to some hawk sounds for a few seconds. You know, if you're not listening carefully, it could sound like all of those sounds were the same. But I was listening very carefully, and they all sounded subtly different to me, right?
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about your book, Gracious Wild, A Shamanic Journey with Hawks. Why did you write it?
Simply put, I wrote it to honor the wild ones. I think maybe it'd be a good idea to just read the dedication I wrote in the beginning of the book, because I forget.
Yeah, please do. Go ahead.
Yeah, sometimes I forget to go back to this, and I have some longer answer, but this is really it. It's to the lonely and sacred island within us all, and the divine spirits that cross open oceans to make our acquaintance there. And when I speak of divine spirits, I'm talking about the wild animals. I was really called through a series of different events to be a mouthpiece for wild animals and speak out on their behalf. In myths and legends, when we look back, there's stories of people walking into the woods and the trees seeing them, and that's still happening, but they're not being met. The trees and the birds and the squirrels, they're all seeing us when we walk into the woods, but we're not seeing them. And so that's really why I wrote this book, to help honor the times when people do see the animals and validate those experiences, and also call people into paying more attention and opening up to those moments.
Well, you know, one of the things that I do with folks a lot is you know, because a lot of people come to me for life coaching just to try to deal with what's going on in the world or maybe to reinvent themselves in some way in the light of what's going on. And I often ask people, what is your connection with nature? And often they say, well, I don't get out into nature much. I spend so much time at the computer. And so often I will assign people to take a couple of hours and go out and spend at least 1 hour in nature somewhere, in a forest, along a stream. And it's very, very difficult for some people to do that. And I emphasize that, you know, the forest really is there waiting for you. It sees you, and your presence has an impact on it. And it's very hard for people to experience that. Certainly they can't in their heads. But when they go out there and they do this, over time, they begin to feel it and experience it. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, and that's a lot of what the beginning of my book, Gracious Wild, is about, is I'm out on an island all by myself, 24 hours a day for 8 days at a time. Mm. So even though I loved the natural world and that's what I went to school for and I'd been doing field work for a number of years, that experience was incredibly isolating and frightening because all of the chatter in my mind came to the forefront. And it was definitely an initiation of sorts. And so I have a lot of compassion for people when they struggle with that, going out to nature and like, what am I supposed to do here? Because we always think we're supposed to be doing. And it,
right.
And being, unfortunately for us now, is a practice. We have to practice that being.
That's right. So tell us about the hawks and in your experience with them and what you wrote about the hawks in your book.
That is... there's so many directions to go with that.
Yeah, just pick one.
Yeah, pick one. I did have the great experience, I guess, and that's a big part of the book. I had the great experience of getting to be in a very close, intimate relationship with two different hawks, who are two different species, actually, and two different characters altogether. And have time with them alone. They would stand on my hand. I had a glove on, and they would stand on my hand, and I would get to take them on walks on the property where they lived and alone, which was just a profound experience to be in their company. They are just such stoic and regal and beautiful, beautiful creatures. And it's just I feel so fortunate to have had that experience because it helps me connect with people when they come and they have the same love for hawks. It helps me be able to share that with them and help create community just around a love of hawks. Grasha and Talia were incredible companions, and the experiences that I had with them, the waking, everyday experiences I had with them, paralleled my entry into the shamanic world. And my dreams and all of it just wove together in this incredibly amazing way. So I feel really fortunate that I was able to put the story down on paper for other people to read and benefit from.
It's a beautiful story, and I encourage you to get Gracious Wild, A Shamanic Journey with Hawks by Stacy Couch. Beautiful, beautiful book. So I'd like to focus for a moment on the word imagination. In the modern world, imagination is sometimes, you know, almost a dirty word. We've been taught to be logical and scientific and rational. You say that imagination is a holy power. What do you mean by that?
Well, I'll try not to take too much time talking about this. This is my recent, just on fire passion that I have
going.
Well,
go for it. Really.
It's about imagination.
You know what? Just take a second. I just want to announce if anyone has any questions or comments for Stacy before she gets into this next very important point, the number to call again is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Go ahead, Stacy, and talk about imagination as a holy power.
Okay. So when I learned how to do shamanic journeys, I really struggled with the idea, am I making this up? Is this just my imagination?
Right.
Because shamanic journeys are, you go into a trance-like state. I use rhythmic percussion to do that. I don't work with psychedelic drugs. I practice neo-shamanism or modern-day shamanism, which is more works with rhythmic percussion. So I go into this dreamlike state. It's like a waking dream where this whole story unfolds. I'll go to the top of a mountain. I may get on the back of an eagle or a hawk and fly over a valley, and it goes on. I can journey for a half an hour, hour, 2 hours, and have all of these things unfold before me, and it's vivid, and I feel it, and I experience it, and I communicate it with it, and I interact with it. And there was always been this nagging piece with me of, okay, and I just had to go with it because it was so fascinating, and there was so much parallel between what happened in shamanic journeys and what I saw in the everyday. And when I do shamanic journeys for people that I don't know, that I haven't even seen face to face, I end up in the journey seeing things or experiencing things that resonate with them, that either correspond to memories they have or things that are currently in their life. So there's definitely a lot of validation for the shamanic journey for me in terms of its authenticity. But there's always, how does imagination play into this? And I could never find a rational explanation for how imagination, as we know it, as the childish thing we're supposed to throw away when we grow up. And I study quite a bit with Carolyn Mace. She has a great online institute that I study through. And she was giving a lecture one night, and in the middle of the lecture, just along with everything else she was talking about, which was brilliant, she all of a sudden started talking about the power of imagination and called it a holy power. And I just about fell out of my chair. She's like, yeah. This is a sacred power. It is a holy power. And all of a sudden, the last 10 years of wondering, how does imagination fit into the shamanic journey, and how do I answer people when they say, well, isn't that just your imagination? And now the answer is yes, it's an incredibly holy power. And it is, because it's through the shamanic journey, I do healing work, I find guidance, I get comfort, solace, I have incredibly transformative experiences. So all of this happens, and then too, if you think about imagination, we are still doing it all the time. We try to pretend like imagination is something we left in our childhood, or we should have at least, and then we sneak little fantasies in here and there, but we don't tell anybody about it. But imagination, we're doing it all the time. We just only imagine about practical things, or allow ourselves, like, we'll all imagine about what I'm going to do today when you wake up in the morning.
Hey, Stacy, we have a caller.
Okay.
We have Judith on the line. Go ahead, Judith.
Well, thank you both. Hi, Carolyn and Stacy.
Hi.
Thank you both for your insights. By the way, my dog, Jax, especially liked those hawk sounds.
Great.
Anyway, I have a question for Stacy. Do you have a mystical experience you could share with us?
Yeah, that one I shared earlier about seeing Buddha in the clouds is definitely one. Shamanic journeys, let me see if I can think of one that's not going to be a five-minute story. I have a habit of telling long stories. I'll tell you a little bit about one of the scenes in my book that I talk about. There was, every morning, I would walk from the cabin where I was staying out on the island I lived on alone. I would walk from the cabin down to the harbor, just to look out over the ocean in the morning. And I walked the same trail every day, and there was a hawk that had a nest nearby, I found out later. She had a nest nearby, and she would wait at this post at a turn in the trail. And she would lift off, as I approached her, she would lift off and hover in the air. And then as I turned on the trail, she would be at my left, on my left side, right above my shoulder, just a couple feet above my head, and fly for a certain time with me as I was walking down the trail. And that was really the first, it was a mystical experience. Even though it was an ordinary, everyday reality, it was a mystical experience, because that was the first time I realized, truly, truly, actually believed that the wild ones were seeing me. And that's, you know, what Carolyn and I were talking about earlier.
Oh, thank you. That's beautiful.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah, and thanks, Judith, for calling in. Appreciate it very much. And if anyone else would like to call in with a question or comment for Stacy, the number is 888-874-4888. Stacy, you talk about ceremonies that honor and bless the land, and goodness knows we need to honor and bless the land right now. Can you tell us more about those?
Yeah, in shamanism, there's such a rich tradition for ceremony, and that's one of the pieces that I really love about it, because we can talk about and think about and love, send love to nature, but we actually need to go out and be out in the forest and see the trees and have the trees see us and speak to the trees. And that's what ceremony is great for. In shamanic traditions, there's all sorts of different ideas and practices for going out. And a couple years ago, I did a summer solstice land blessing with a group of people. And it was just such a beautiful time to share our appreciation for the land and say prayer and offer ourselves as channels for healing or light or grace, however you'd like to explain that, and just be together and really solidify our sense of community on that day with the longest day with the most light of the year. And those ceremonies are important. That's another thing we've lost in our culture. So we've lost talking about the soul, we've lost shamanism, and we've lost ceremony. And all of those things are so nurturing for us and also nurturing for the natural world. So I encourage people, even in the simplest of ways, to honor the place where you live or your favorite place out in nature where you go visit.
Absolutely. And one last thing I want to talk to you about, and by the way, we're still open for callers if anyone would like to call 888-874-4888. I want to ask Stacy this question. It's about earth and spirituality. Personally, I don't know how they can be separated, because for me, it is not earth hyphen spirituality. It is earth hyphen spirituality. It's not earth and spirituality. Earth is here and spirituality is over there. So I think you're kind of on the same page with me about that. And I'm wondering if you talk to us about integrating the natural world with our spiritual practice and why we should.
I've been studying a lot of different mystics lately, and one of them I've been studying quite a bit is St. Francis of Assisi. Obviously, he's a very, very, very devout lover of the natural world. And one piece of his writing that I came across recently is he talks about, in one of his prayers, he says, "Help us to see that by restoring our relationship with you," which he's meaning the Creator, the One Source, "we will also renew our connection with all your creation." And in reading that, it made me pause, because I actually started with renewing my connection with all creation, and then that brought me into a deeper sense of all that is. And so it was, for me, a chicken or the egg kind of thing. And so it's interesting thinking about earth spirituality. I think some people do come into spirituality first as through God or through spirit or whoever they originally, whom, you know, ever they call to.
Whatever their tradition is.
Yeah. And then they find the natural world, and then they start to see how the two intermingle. But then there's the idea of that we can go into the natural world first and then find that connection through the other way. We have a way of seeing things in a linear fashion, right, and compartmentalizing things.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's just our nature. And and the natural world, too, we're so used to just thinking of it as what we can touch and see and taste and feel with our five senses, right, whereas spirituality is this esoteric thing that is the unseen. But we don't realize that the natural world, there's this whole unseen layer or layers of what's going on. And then with spirituality, there's very tangible effects of a spiritual practice in our lives. And so I think, yeah, it helps break down the boundaries of all of those kind of things when we start to open up to the natural world and have our spiritual practice be integrated with being out in nature and with the natural world and the symbols and metaphors there. And that helps us then, therefore, start to see all the interconnectivity and start to expand our awareness.
So, Stacy, one more time, would you give us the name of your website?
Yes, I will. It is wildgratitude.com.
And Stacy Couch from Colorado is author of Gracious Wild, A Shamanic Journey with Hawks. I am so pleased to have had you on the show today, Stacy. This has really been wonderful. Nature is one of my huge passions, as it is yours, and I thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This is a really exciting opportunity, and I'm glad to have had the time to talk about what we got to talk about today.
And we'll see all of you again next week on the Lifeboat Hour on April 10th for a special memorial show on Mike Rupert. Have a good week, everyone.
Everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe's still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes.